Hi, this is Tom Winifrith with reflections on turning 50. First of all, I would like to say thank you very much to everybody who has wished me a happy birthday, whether it be by LinkedIn, on Facebook, by Twitter, by email, by voice message. Thank you to my father, who was the first to call in this morning. He sang me happy birthday. Dad, don't give up your day job, retirement. I don't think you'll be turning professional as a singer, but the gesture was very much appreciated. So thank you to you all. As I intimated elsewhere, I actually come into this birthday feeling more and more depressed about the state of the world and about where life is going. I should say, I thought for many years I wouldn't make it through to 50. When I was in my teens, my early teens, I was convinced as I went to bed most nights that we were about to be nuked by the Russians. The government sent out silly leaflets, Protect and Survive, I think they were called, about how you could build a shelter underneath your bed and you'd survive a nuclear attack. I think unlikely that would have happened. But we were all convinced that things were going to get pretty grim. I remember my history teacher explaining to us all, age 13, how when it looked like war was about to break out, he planned to take his family to Birmingham and to stand them in the middle of the motorway because they would be the first to die and they wouldn't have to live in the horrific aftermath of a radioactive island of nuclear war. But we're all convinced we're going to die of nuclear war. Luckily, thanks to Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, we didn't. Then, of course, came AIDS. We're all convinced in my late teens that we're going to die of AIDS. It wasn't necessarily because we were highly promiscuous. In fact, we were so terrified of getting AIDS that it was a pretty grim time to be a late teen. But we were convinced in the initial hysteria that if you shared, if you had a beer glass, which some other person who'd once listened to a Judy Garland record had shared, you'd be dropping down dead a week next Thursday. It was a mad time based on paranoia and misinformation. But we were all convinced we were going to die then. Somehow I made it through 20, perhaps helped by that lack of promiscuity driven by the fear of AIDS. I made it through 20 and then made it through 30. The peak time for male suicide is 39, but my life was going brilliantly at 39, or at least I thought it was. And so I happily made it through my 40th and had a birthday party in a boat on Thames. It was a great old hoot. Age 45, I was told by my doctor that I had a 50% chance of making it through to 50 without a major stroke or a heart attack, which could easily prove fatal. It was because I was humongously overweight, had diabetes, which was off the scale, and smoked heavily. Well, I'm not smoking. I'm still a little bit overweight, or a bit too much overweight after Christmas, but that will be tackled with a severe diet starting tomorrow, and I'm in a lot better shape than I was, and my diabetes is in far better shape than it was back then. So I've made it through to 50. I stayed up till just after midnight and thought, yikes, I'm 50. I should thank my blessings. I mean, a lot has improved. Before I go on to how grim the world looks going forward, I should say that a lot has improved during my lifetime. The world is a far more tolerant workplace than it was 50 or 60 years ago. I reflect on the fact that 60 odd years ago, it would have been illegal for me to be married to my current wife, who is of Indian origin, in 13 of the United States, because mixed race marriages were illegal. Now, 15% of marriages in America are mixed race. They've had an African American president. That is massive progress. As we can all see, the year before I was born, it was still illegal to be gay in this country. Then it was decriminalized as a result of the Silverman Bill. And now I think we have genuine equality for LGBT citizens. That is enormous progress. When I was 11, there were only 20 female MPs in Parliament. There are now 200. I would accept that the general quality of MPs has gone down. They're more corrupt than ever and possibly stupider than ever. But at least there's a more representative sample of stupid and corrupt people in Parliament. That is progress. When I was 11, it would be something like 10% of the people going into top firms as graduate trainees were female. These days, it's closer to 50%. We have a massive narrowing of the gender pay gap. Now, people under 40, there is basically no gender pay gap. That is massive progress seen during my lifetime. So the world has got a lot better in many ways. In the decade in which I was born, 15% of people in towns in Britain had outside lavatories. Unbelievable. You wouldn't see that today. We have seen real progress across this nation and in the world. It's got a better place. Nonetheless, I feel a little bit disheartened, or very disheartened, more disheartened, I think, than I have at any round number birthday. I should say that there is a lot which I should feel cheerful about. I woke up this morning next to a very beautiful woman who's very clever, very funny, very kind, very intelligent. I'm immensely proud of her career achievements, the book she writes, the way she imparts knowledge to young people in a way that is balanced and based on data, not prejudice, which seems incredibly rare in the liberal arts today. So that is something to be grateful for. I've spent most of the day with my one-year-old son, Joshua, who can be a bit of a pain at 12 o'clock at night when he screams, but otherwise is a true delight. He has a lovely smile and makes me very happy, and I'm very excited about the life which I hope he will be able to lead. So there are reasons to be cheerful. Nonetheless, there are two things which have been weighing on me increasingly in recent months, and which I've been reflecting on more and more as I go in the run-up to my 50th birthday. It's not so much that I'm getting old. You can look at it that if you are lucky enough to live your allotted three score years and 10, you can view them as days of the week, in which case I've just gone into the early hours of Saturday morning. There's only the rest of Saturday and Sunday left. So there is obviously a growing consideration of the fact that you will one day go to what hopefully a better place, or possibly just a hole in the ground. The ideas of your own mortality. You see your parents getting older and dying. My stepmother died last year. My father is old and suffering from many of the afflictions of old age and other things, and that presses on your mind. We're moving forward, our generation, into the front row. That is something that presses on your mind, but I have enough reasons to be happy, my wife and my son, and to think about how I spend the next few years with them to be cheerful. The dissatisfaction comes at two other levels. One is professional. Now, you may think that what I do is irrelevant. My job is writing about the stock market and financial services, and I've specialised in exposing fraud and corruption. People lying to gain financial advantage, people stealing, people lying to investors, lying to themselves, and basically enriching themselves at the expense of others. You may say this is pretty insignificant work. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't make a blind bit of difference to society. You may be right. In its defence, I think there are two points. Firstly, there may be a perception in some quarters that the stock market and financial services is only about rich people gambling with money. That's not actually the case. A lot of the money invested in the stock market is invested in pension funds, occupational pension funds. If you work for Marks & Spencer, you may have an occupational pension fund. Most people are in that position. So there's a lot of pension fund money, which is just ordinary people's money being invested. And if it's being invested in companies that are frauds or being stolen, that is obviously bad news. And there's also a lot of people who are exposed to financial services and who can be ripped off who are very poor. I have championed the cause of people who've been conned out of tens of thousands of pounds or thousands of pounds by a man called Darren Winters, a charlatan and a con man. These are the most vulnerable in society, and it's often those who are fleeced by financial services are the most vulnerable, since they're promised a golden ticket, a way out of the ghetto, a way out of the slums, and they fall for it. So this is not just a game for rich people. There is a wider issue, and that is of capital misallocation. I hope that all the money invested in the stock market is invested in good companies, companies that grow, companies that use that money to expand their production facilities, to create jobs, to generate profits. And upon those profits, taxes are levied, which go to pay for social services. It is good if all the money in the stock market is invested in good, growing companies, which then grow their profits, employ more people, which is good, and pay more taxes. That is good for society, and that is what the stock market should be for. If money is invested in frauds or in over-promoted companies or companies that lie, then this is going to the wrong place. And that means fewer jobs will be created, fewer profits will be made, fewer taxes will be raised, and this is bad for society. Capital misallocation is bad. Capital misallocation is essentially taking money which could go into good companies and allowing it to be stolen by criminals. That is surely a bad thing. And that is something I hope to stop happening. So I think that what I do should have some use. And we've had some major triumphs over the past 5 years, exposing the company Globo, which was a major fraud in London, is one of them. The exposure of the Quindel fraud was the biggest stock market fraud for 30 years. Was another major triumph. I was congratulated by the regulators for my role in exposing that fraud. And I've exposed dozens of criminals on the Share Profits website over the past few years. That is good. What I find depressing, and I have found increasingly depressing, is that nothing happens. I do believe that the crooked Greeks behind Globo will have their collars felt. So big was the fraud and so blatant was the fraud. And I believe that will happen within the next 24 months. I'm absolutely convinced that Rob Terry of Quindel will have his collar felt. And I think that could well happen during 2018. Certainly it will happen by the end of 2019. And he will end up going to prison. And that is good. I don't know how much these people will be punished. In an ideal world, they would be fined 150% of their proceeds of crime, so they would be bankrupted, and then they would be sent to the slammer for decades, and that would act as a real deterrent to other fraudsters. I very much doubt that it will be anything like that. The problem is that the authorities will use one or two high-profile convictions to persuade the people that they're doing their job properly. They will ignore dozens, no, hundreds of other crimes which we point out on this website on a daily basis, or on the Share Profits website, rather, on a daily basis. They will ignore those crimes. They don't investigate them. They do nothing about them. And that volume of fraud and crime just goes unpunished. That is something that I find profoundly depressing. You see, if they were just to prosecute and deal with a fraction of the people we have handed to them on a plate, that would serve to deter many others, and it would make the markets more efficient, it would stop theft, and it would stop capital misallocation. It would be a good thing all round. I am, I have to say, depressed about the futility of what I do. As you may know, my uncle, Christopher Booker, is a journalist. He's been a campaigning journalist for all of my life, if not all of his. I think he won Campaigning Journalist of the Year for exposing corruption on inner city planning in 1971, maybe it was 1972, I was three or four. He is still, aged 80, a remarkable man, a campaigning journalist. Some of his biggest exposés in recent years, which he has defied threats of imprisonment and a court sanction for exposing, have been of the way that social services steal children from perfectly good parents on the flimsiest of pretexts, using secret courts. That has been good work, but sadly, whilst this has been exposed, very little has been done to actually deal with this problem. It still goes on. I talk to Uncle Chris probably at least once a week, and we both share our frustrations that you can expose wrongdoing, you can hand it on a plate to people who could do something about it, and it doesn't happen. To his credit, Uncle Chris battles on. I'm not sure that I really feel the urge to battle on because it just seems a little bit futile. My bigger concern and my bigger worry is something which has been brought into focus by events at my wife's university. I am not able at this stage, since they're yet to unfold fully, to reveal exactly what happened. But suffice to say, I gave a lecture, which I introduced by saying that I am a person who voted for Brexit, who voted Conservative and supported Donald Trump. That perhaps was not a message to give to a bunch of 19-year-olds, but I was truthful in that. The lecture was entirely data-driven. I did not make any statements whatsoever which were not backed up by independent data. What has happened, or what I can tell you, is that a student at that lecture launched a complaint against me in an official forum and lied about what I said. The lecture was recorded, but that appeared not to have made any difference. total lies about what I said were lodged as a formal complaint. It's still panning out now, and if I get to say the full story, you will be truly horrified by what happened and what the ramifications were for me and my family. But let's see how this plays out. But it's been profoundly depressing. My wife says, look, this is just one young person. Most people are decent, ordinary, decent, good people who wouldn't dream of behaving in that way. And I'm sure she is right in that respect. However, I would note that on campuses across the UK, this tactic of lying or denying a platform to people you disagree with the nastiest of methods, does seem to be a bit of a trend. But I'd accept that most young people would not seek to deny free speech by using lies and other underhand tricks. However, most young people and a growing portion of society disagree profoundly with me and with the values which I hold dearly. I grew up in a different world to them. When I grew up, it was natural to go to church on a Sunday morning, and it would seem just a normal thing to do for many people in society. These days, there's a very dwindling band, and amongst the metropolitan elite, amongst the intelligentsia, the media, and all academia campuses across Britain, open derision of the Christian faith is almost de rigueur. Free speech is something which is selective. Free speech is only for those with whom you agree. Capitalism is seen as evil. Capitalism is seen as exploitative, a way for the rich to get richer, something which is somehow unethical and not as what it is. It is capitalism which has delivered the great advances in technology over the past 200 years, whether it is the railways, aviation, the internet, etc. It is capitalism which has delivered the great advances in medical technology, cures, or at least treatments for cancer, AIDS. That has come through the private sector. It is capitalism which has raised more and more people, tens, hundreds of millions of people, from absolute poverty. Yes, the gap between rich and poor may have risen, but the level of absolute poverty has diminished dramatically. And that is down to capitalism, not the state. So capitalism is a force of good. I explained this all in my lecture to Bar Spar. But somehow that is not the popular mood. The popular mood in this country is one where people believe they all have rights without obligations, either to others, to core values, or indeed to the state. So we all have rights to be supported in what we do, whether that is having a sex change operation funded by the taxpayer, or whether that is choosing not to work, or choosing to be a student forever. We have rights to be funded by the hard work of others. We have no obligations to contribute to that pool. That is a change from the way people viewed the world when I was growing up. There is a general perception that we wicked capitalists, those in the private sector, are rich, and we need to give more of our hard-earned income to those who are either not working or, more importantly, those who are in the public sector. I demonstrated in my lecture to Bar Spar that, in fact, public sector workers, on average, earn more, both in a mean and a median way, than those of us in the private sector. They've had bigger pay increases over the past few years. They have more holidays. They have better pensions, yada, 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 yada. It's irrelevant. That is not the way that people perceive what is happening right now. And things are only going to get worse. David Aranovich, the quite appalling left-wing journalist, did a slot on Newsnight the other night looking at how the attitude of the population towards Brexit would change over the next 2 or 3 years. His analysis was pretty simple. 80% or 75% of those old people who will die each year voted for Brexit. Only 20% or 25% voted for Remain. Amongst those coming of age, turning 18, the figures are the other way around. According to Aranovich, therefore, we should have another vote in 3 years' time when 3 years of people who share my values will have died and 3 years of people who will share the values, if not the methods, of the student who attempted to end my career will have come onto the electoral roll. Society is changing. Now, how do I respond to that? There are some people out there who are saying that if Jeremy Corbyn comes to power and increases the tax rate dramatically, they will stop working. My own thoughts are rather different. I'm minded to think that I should stop working now. Why should I risk my capital and why should I work hard to generate very large amounts of tax for the British state when the money it gets is misspent so badly? I don't really care whether it's under Corbyn or May. To me, one is just a less ludicrous version of the other. It is under Theresa May that at primary schools in the town in which I live in Bristol, money is spent on courses talking about how penguins are gay, and therefore four-year-olds and five-year-olds are taught how it is normal for them to be gay. It is normal for them to want to wear tutus if they're boys and combat gear if they're girls. Age five. That is taxpayers' money being spent, and it's being approved by the Tories. Now, I don't agree with that. I'm lucky, actually, by the way, in the area I live in. It's a nice working class district, and most of the mothers at the local primary school speak Polish. They're good Catholics. They're not going to stand up for this shit if it's tried to be introduced where I live. But in other parts of Bristol, it is the norm. It is perfectly valid for people to say, look, you are a minority. You have to accept democracy. We will be going on in a world where your taxes will go up to pay for more money for public sector workers, for people who opt not to work, for more money for causes which you fundamentally disagree with, money to tackle climate change, a bogus religion, money to push an agenda of explaining to five-year-olds the normality of homosexuality. It's perfectly fair to say if the electorate vote for it, that is what has to happen. And I'm pretty sure that that is what will happen. I can see that people who hold my values, we are a dying breed. The trend is only going to get worse and worse. There will be less free speech. There will be more focus on this orthodox agenda of the campus left. That will become the dominant agenda. There will be more demands to take money out of my pay packet to steal the labours of my endeavours. There will be more money spent on totally pointless and fatuous causes. In the end, it will end in tears, but that is the way we're going. It is perfectly the right of society, with all these young people coming on, to push this agenda and for it to happen. Equally, it's my right to say, well, I can't be asked to support it anymore. I can't see the point of working that extra bit harder to pay more taxes to pay for this folly. I don't want any part of it. In my heart, I know that I would like to leave this country and not pay a cent towards this madness. I fear that's not going to happen, but it is the way I feel. And that's why I feel depressed as I turn 50. The writing is on the wall. People who share my values, we are diminishing. We may be the majority now, but we're diminishing. And we're being shouted down by a growing incredibly demanding minority. We will soon be drowned out in our thoughts. We'll be drowned out in our speech. And there's nothing that can be done about it. So what is there for me to look forward to? What is there to motivate me to work, to pay more money, to support this madness? That is why I feel a little bit depressed as I turn 50.